Hi, and welcome to Give Us Mork. I'm Neve.
I'm Megan.
And I'm choking on chocolate.
Worst things to be choking on.
It's very, very true. So how are you guys?
Are you doing well?
Are you? Because you're about to not be. Because I have a very depressing case. Oh, Megan, you're unfrozen.
Yay! And she's not meaning that my cold heart has now thawed. It hasn't. My monitor has.
So, last week, Megan told us a really sad story.
I did, about Michelle Avila.
And today, I have a really sad story.
Listen, we are your weekly, scheduled on a Monday, dose of depression.
You're welcome. As if Mondays weren't hard enough. We come along and we're like, hey, have you cried today? No? Well, guess what?
That's it.
And as a PSA, just be careful on your gingerbread cookies out there. You don't want to choke on them.
You do not want to choke on them, particularly while driving. Mike, talking to you.
So, this week I'm going to tell you about the murder of Kathy Sesnick. And if that sounds familiar, you will know it as The Keepers on Netflix, which is a very good documentary. I thought, personally, it was unreal. Very, very sad. Also, very enraging.
I didn't watch it.
Oh my God, you actually missed out. That was a really good documentary.
I'm actually so bad at watching stuff on Netflix, to be honest. I'm watching Suits right now, and I will get addicted to that. Then we'll go back to The Office, and then we'll find something else to be addicted to. It's like, we sandwich it together with The Office a lot.
You know, it's something in between The Office.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to give a trigger warning out there that this case does talk about, you know, the problems within the Catholic Church, and they're lovely, lovely, lovely priests.
Okay, so this is going to be really bad because obviously both myself and Neve are Irish. So be prepared.
Look, if you are like super religious, and that's completely fine. I do not judge you for that. I'm probably going to have a few choice words come the end of this, and I apologize in advance.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, it's not the religion in itself. It's the people who claim to...
Who claim the religion, but use it for these evil, evil...
Exactly.
Evil things.
Yes.
So, yeah, I just want to say, like, if I insult you, I apologize. It is not your religion at all. Never in a million years would it be that. The priests that have done this
that
bullshit.
Hide behind it. Yes.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just wanted to let everyone know that, you know, obviously it is going to touch on those topics. So if that's not for you, then I would highly recommend you click away just from this episode, because it's kind of the surrounding of this episode. Like, it's going to be heavily throughout the case. So maybe check out Megan's previous episode about Michelle if you haven't done so already. Or we have loads of other episodes there that maybe you haven't listened to yet. You might want to just give them a go. So, and then we'll see you next week. Hopefully a slightly more uplifting case.
Yeah, next week I am keeping it, light, I'm keeping it fresh, I'm keeping it cool.
Yeah. So, I have a frog in my throat. So, Kathy Ann Sesnick was born on November 17th, 1942 in Lawrenceville, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. She was the oldest of four children to Joseph and Anne Sesnick. Kathy, which I'm going to call her Kathy or Sister Kathy from now on because she went by that. Kathy attended St. Mary's School and St. Augustine's High School. She was the valedictorian of her class, her graduating year in 1960. She was an overachiever and was class president her senior year and was on the student council. Kathy was very religious and at the age of 18 decided to become a woman of God and join the Sisters of Notre Dame in Baltimore. She then... Yeah.
Oh my God, she just got sick in your mouth.
No, I burped and coughed at the same time. Apologies. Yeah, it is very interesting. I've always wondered what like makes somebody join the nunnery.
Yeah, like I think it's very respectable to really just go for it, and you dedicate your whole life to something that you really believe and support in. So fair play.
Absolutely. Fair play. Because it is giving up your whole life. Like,
well, yeah.
Like, well, not to them, obviously. Yeah. But, you know, it's a big like decision.
Of course. And then to make it so young, as a lot of people do.
Yeah, exactly. She then started to teach at the Archbishop Keogh High School in 1965 at the age of 23. Kathy then took her final vows in 1967 to become a nun. Sister Kathy taught English and drama while at Keogh High School, which when I was watching the documentary, I thought they were all pronouncing Keogh wrong. Oh. Keogh, the last name.
Yeah.
But no, it's Keogh. It's like K-E-O-U-G-H. But I thought it was just Americans butchering an Irish name.
You're watching your documentary like, he got it wrong.
Me like, it's Keogh, you dumb fox. And no, it's jokes on me.
For I was a dumb fox.
Literally. She was beloved by her students. Actually, still to this day, many of her students say that she was their favorite teacher.
No.
In 1969, Sister Kathy left Keogh High School and was transferred to be in a public school, Western High, for missionary work. Herself and another nun, Sister Russell Phillips, were given permission to move into an apartment on their own. Mm. The carriage house apartments, and they were allowed to live there, and they were allowed to wear normal clothes because they were going to like a public high school.
Okay.
Sister Kathy's father was concerned about this new adventure in her life because she always lived at home and then at 18 moved into the Sisters of Notre Dame, and so she never once lived by herself, and all of a sudden she was like 23, 24.
Yeah, living by herself.
Living by herself. On November 7th, 1969, Sister Kathy left her apartment to head towards the Edmondson Village Shopping Centre at around 7:30 p.m. The main reason for this shopping trip was to buy an engagement present for her younger sister, along with some other errands that she had to run. Sister Kathy cashed her paycheck at the Catsonville Bank and then possibly bought buns from Muley's Bakery, as there was a box from Muley's Bakery found in her car. At 8:30 p.m. a witness remembers seeing Sister Kathy driving her car, and shortly after this another witness says that they saw a man driving Sister Kathy's car.
Oh.
While Sister Kathy was trying to escape at the back of the car.
No way.
Yeah, it's weird, right?
And this is a witness.
Yeah, like they made an actual statement. Like they were like, no, like I definitely saw her.
And did anybody call the police?
I don't know. That part's unclear.
Okay, all right.
Sister Russell became nervous when it began to just get late and later and even later, and Sister Kathy was still not home, so she called a mutual friend of theirs. She called Gerald Jerry Coob and Peter McKeown, and she told them about how she was super nervous and super worried that Kathy wasn't home yet. So Jerry and Peter drove up to the apartment and they sat with Sister Russell for several hours, Jerry claiming that they prayed for Sister Kathy's safe return. When they were leaving the apartment at around 4:40 a.m. the next morning, they noticed that Sister Kathy's car was illegally parked across the apartment complex. The car was very clearly abandoned and was visibly muddy. So Jerry and Peter called police to report Sister Kathy as missing, because, like, obviously that's weird as shit.
Yeah, 100%.
She went missing. Her car wasn't there when they arrived. And then when they were leaving at like 5 a.m., there's her car just randomly like abandoned.
Okay, so as somebody who hasn't seen this documentary, that is like the car was clearly driven by somebody who knew where she lived.
Yeah.
To have the idea to leave it in their car park. But why would they leave it in such a way though?
Right. That's the part that I never understood. Like, why are you leaving it so clearly, like, so clearly abandoned?
Yeah, you would take like the extra 30 seconds it takes to park
it. Witnesses came forward and said that they had seen Sister Kathy's car sitting abandoned since 10:30 p.m. the night before. So it was sitting there for like 5 hours.
Okay.
Before, like, and they just thought like somebody's just after abandoning a car, like, cool.
Yeah, you don't think anything of it.
No. There were twigs and leaves found inside the car. However, there was no evidence of a struggle. This led police to believe that someone Sister Kathy knew had coerced her out of her car. The police mm-hmm. began a search for Kathy immediately, but sadly were unsuccessful. No one knew what had happened to Sister Kathy until on January 3rd, 1970, a man and his son were out hunting near an informal garbage dump, and they found the body of Sister Kathy Sesnick. The autopsy showed that Sister Kathy had died from blunt force trauma to the head. Whoever had attacked Sister Kathy had fractured her skull, causing hemorrhaging on her brain. The police brutally hit over the head. The police...
That is horrific, sorry.
No, it absolutely is. The police never found the murder weapon. There was a lot of controversy surrounding Sister Kathy's death. Some people believed that her death was linked to the death of a 20-year-old, Joyce Malecki. Joyce was born June 21st, 1949 in Baltimore to her parents, Casimir and Doris Malecki. She had three brothers, Donald, Daryl and Pat. Joyce worked for a liquor distributor. Couldn't say that for a hot second.
She worked for a distributor.
She worked for some sort of distributor and lived in Lansdowne. On November 11th, just 4 days after Sister Kathy, Joyce was going to do some early Christmas shopping. Sorry, I should like expand. 4 days after Kathy went missing. Okay. She was going to do some early Christmas shopping at the Harrendale Mall in Glen Burnie. Joyce was then supposed to meet up with her boyfriend, who was stationed in Fort Meade, which is not far from Lansdowne, for a lunch date. When she never showed, her boyfriend became worried. And 2 days later, two men were out hunting and came across Joyce's body in a little... I typed this word without a fucking clue how to pronounce it. Oh, go me. Basically, they found her body in like a little kind of in a river, but like a makeshift river, if you know what I mean. You know, like basically kind of like a little mini river flowing through okay. in between the two towns.
Okay.
So that was close by to Fort Meade Soldier Park training area where the boyfriend was, you know, training.
Okay.
Her hands had been tied behind her back and she had multiple scratches and contusions on her body. Yeah, this showed that Joyce tried to put up a fight, and the autopsy showed that her cause of death was either choking or drowning. It was unclear which one it was. She had stab wounds on her neck and about a dozen superficial cuts on her neck as well, along with abrasions on her forehead, nose and chin. However, the medical examiner stated that these were not severe enough to be the cause of death. The FBI were to investigate the murder of Joyce because of the jurisdiction, and they claimed that they never found any link between Joyce and Sister Kathy. However, Joyce's brothers have said that when Joyce died, Father Joseph Maskell, who we will talk about shortly, had sent a condolence card to the family, and this would link to Sister Kathy.
Huh.
Joyce's brothers have also stated that they feel that Joyce's death was not investigated enough, and there is suspicion that maybe a serial killer was active in the area at the time, as over the following 2 years, another two women would go missing from the Baltimore area around Christmas time. However, the theory was never proven, and the cases were never solved.
That is a tough one to prove. Had the other two women been found, do you know?
I believe they were found dead, like in similar ways. But
Right.
I suppose you have to remember, like, it's the 70s.
Everybody was out killing everybody in the 70s.
And it was very hard, I think, for police to link, serial killers were kind of only starting to really become a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you will. So Jerry Coop was also a suspect at the time of Sister Kathy's disappearance. Sister Russell had called him and Peter McKeown when Kathy went missing and they found her car. Jerry and Sister Kathy were in love and they would write to each other.
No.
Yeah. Jerry had asked Sister Kathy to marry him before she had taken her final vows as a nun and before he became a priest.
Okay. I mean, I feel, why do I feel like they're cheating on God?
Adulterers, I think.
Oh my God, one of the sins. I'm like, when?
Me when? Kathy had turned Jerry down, stating that she was meant to become a nun.
Go, Kathy.
Yeah, she was like, no, like, in life I am supposed to be a nun. I know this. Jerry told police that he knew nothing of the abuse that was going on at Keough High School and that Kathy never mentioned it, which we'll get into it in a minute. But he was like, she never told me anything. I knew nothing. I don't know. Jack, shit.
Okay.
If you're so in love, Jerry.
If you're so in love, you should know. You should know things that she doesn't know, okay?
Okay. Get it together if you're so in love. However, people do suspect that he did know and that he actually helped the church cover up the murder. Now, this again is obviously just a theory and there is no evidence to actually back it up. The night Sister Kathy went missing, he claimed that he went to see a movie with Peter McKeown and then they had dinner before Sister Russell called. However, Sister Russell has since passed and Peter McKeown cannot be contacted to back up Jerry's alibi.
Huh. What, in that he, like, he's refusing to talk or that he just can't be found?
He gave, like, I think, an official statement or whatnot to police. Yeah. And then after that was like, I want nothing to do with this and removed himself. And now they can't find him. Like, investigators. So like in the documentary, like they can't get a hold of him. Like, he just really doesn't want anything to do with this whole conspiracy theory and anything to do with the church and shit like that.
Okay.
The police never really believed Jerry when they questioned him, but because obviously that they had no evidence, like, they were never able to arrest him. Like, you can't just arrest somebody just cause you feel like he did it.
Yeah.
Which sometimes is annoying.
Your Honor, he's got bad vibes.
Your Honor, I just know.
You know when you just know, Judge, you know.
You know. So, this is when police learned of the name Father Joseph Maskell. Anthony Joseph Maskell was born April 13th, 1939, in Baltimore City, to Joseph Francis and Susie Helen Maskell. He graduated from Calvert Hall College High School and joined St. Mary's Seminary to join the priesthood. I don't know why my sentence says to joint the priesthood. I was clearly tired when I typed this. Joseph was ordained on May 22nd, 1965, at the age of 26. Then in 1972, he earned a master's degree in school psychology and a certificate of advanced study in counseling. After Maskell was ordained, he worked at the Sacred Heart of Mary in Baltimore from 1965 till 1966. He was then transferred to St. Clement's Church in Lansdowne from 1966 to 1968. He then moved to the Lady of Victory from 1968 to 1970. And he was simultaneously was working at the Archbishop Keogh High School in Baltimore as a counselor and chaplain from 1967 till 1975.
Yeah, so he would have had a connection to Joyce because he worked in Lansdowne.
I'm pretty sure in the documentary, like, one of Joyce's brothers was like, we went to his masses and, like, we, like, there what, basically, there is a link between Kathy Sesnick and Joyce. Okay. And it's Father Mascal.
Yeah, because obviously Joyce was part of his congregation and then he would have worked with Sister Kathy.
Yeah, so there was a link, but police were like, no, there's no link. Mascal was then removed from the high school by the headmistress when she received complaints about him from parents.
Oh, don't tell me this is what I think it's going to be.
Yep. Mascal was then sent for, quote, treatment at the Institute of Living from 1992 till 1993 over allegations the Archdiocese of Baltimore had received.
Oh, yeah, they're so good at just not putting people in prison where they belong and instead just moving them around places where they can't be found. Oh, we sent them to treatment. We sent them to another church. We sent them to another school.
And this is exactly what goes on here. He was then sent to St. Augustine Romanian Catholic Church in Elkridge, Maryland from 1993 till 1994. Then the Archdiocese and Father Joseph Mascal were sued by a Jane Doe and a Jane Roe over the abuse that they had received at the hands of Mascal. Over the years as a chaplain for Keogh High School, Mascal was also the chaplain for the Baltimore Police Department, and he also carried a police scanner in his car.
There is no need, while you were committing crimes, to be on the lookout for crimes. Also, no, you're waiting to hear your own name. That's all. Yep. I think that is.
There were many accusations made against Mascal over the years. The first known complaint was by an altar boy, Charles Franz, who was an altar boy at St. Clement's Church. Charles claimed that Mascal would make him drink the communion wine to make him drunk before he would sexually assault him.
Oh.
In 1967, Charles told his mother what was happening and she made a complaint to the school. And soon after that, Mascal was transferred to Keogh.
A complaint to the school? Wait, police? 911?
He was like, no, like I told my mom and she went straight to like the school and was like, my son is claiming that this man is assaulting him. Like, the fuck are you going to do about it? And then being the Catholic Church, we're like, we'll just move him to a different congregation. Okay, thank you. Goodbye.
Okay, so just because he's a priest, he doesn't get to be reported to the police?
He ended up having like major problems in his life. Charles ended up like being like a raging alcoholic and drug addict. And
oh, I thought you meant the priest. Oh, Jesus. Oh, God, no, poor kid.
Yeah, no, the kid, like, he ended up having a lot of issues within his life because basically what happened to him as a child and how the school just removed the priest. Like, they didn't remove the, like, they didn't solve the problem. Like, that's not a solution. Like, he says himself, like, that wasn't a solution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, the solution was to go to the police about it.
Yeah, of course.
And I think he claims that the school, now, I could be wrong, so feel free to correct me, but I think the mother took a payment from the school to be like, shh, it's fine, he's gone. I could be wrong on that, but I feel like I'm not, but I could be. This is when Jane Doe, who we now know is Jean Viner, claimed that Mascal and another priest, Father Neil Magnus, would sexually assault her. She said that they would tell her to take the Holy Spirit while they would assault her.
No. You are...
dirty. Dirty old men.
Vile, disgusting creatures. There's a special place for you in whatever hell you believe in. You piece of shit. Oh my God.
She also claims that the two priests would let other men, such as police officers, come into the office and assault her. Then another woman who was Jane Roe, which we now know is Teresa Lancaster. She said that she was assaulted by Mascal, and on Halloween 1970, he took her and another girl out to a wooded area, with like sort of like a lover's lane, where two police officers came, made everyone go home, and then they proceeded to rape the two girls while Mascal stood outside the cars watching, like, as a lookout.
I'm going to get sick. Mm-hmm. That is, oh my God, those poor, poor girls.
In 1969, as the school year was coming to an end, Jean Viner confided in Sister Kathy what was happening to her. It is believed that Jean was not the only student to confide in Sister Kathy. Kathy told Jean not to worry, that she was going to help and she was going to solve this problem. However, when the new school year started up, Kathy had been transferred to Western High.
I wonder why.
Many years later, Jean started to remember what had happened to her at Keogh. Basically, Jean had pushed it all down.
Of course, yeah.
As far back as it would go. But as she got older and started her own family, it all came rushing back, mm-hmm. which is very upsetting. As she started to remember what happened to her, Keogh, she also started to remember that after Sister Kathy went missing, Mascal told her that he knew where Sesnik was. Jean claims that Mascal took her to a wooded area and showed her Kathy's body. And she remembers it because she remembers wiping maggots off of Kathy's face.
No.
And Mascal told her, quote, "You see what happens when you say bad things about people?"
No. Oh my God.
I know, right? In 1992, Jean filed a lawsuit against Mascal over the assaults that she had endured while at Keogh. And this was when he was sent for his quote-unquote treatment. How Ask convenient.
Treatment.
They moved him, like, to a different state. Like, they confined him, basically. The Archdiocese of Baltimore claimed that Jean didn't have anyone to corroborate her story. Even though it is said that anywhere from 30 to 100 people came forward and said that Mascal had assaulted them.
Oh my God. Sweet. What is this man doing? Well, we know what he's doing, but you know what I mean? Like,
I know.
Oh my God, those poor children. You think you're safe, like, with an adult, and especially with someone that...
But especially in school. Like, he was assaulting them during school.
Oh, my God.
They used to be called down to the office. They talk about it and they're like, you used to just hear someone's name. Obviously, not every student endured this, so not every student knew. But those that mm-hmm. did know said that you would just hear someone's name. Because, like, you'd hear Mascal hop on the intercom and be like, "Jean Viner to the office, please." And they just knew, like, they just knew what he was going to do to her.
You're telling me that nobody else in the school may have thought that it was a little bit weird.
You see, he called that many different, and it was a Catholic school, so he'd be calling them in and it would be like, oh, they're coming in for their weekly confession.
Wow.
Or they're coming, I need Jean to do a job for me. So before we continue, let's take a quick ad break and let y'all gather yourselves. And we're back. So, unfortunately, the lawsuit was dropped by the courts as that they rejected Jean had repressed memories and was only then remembering what had happened to her. So they were kind of saying, like, you know, repressed memories can be unreliable, which... It's frustrating.
It still doesn't change the fact that it happened to her and that she did say something at the time.
No. And it's frustrating 1000% because this did happen to her. But there had been cases where people had claimed these repressed memories. And then upon like further research investigation, they were like half truths.
Okay.
Do you know, so like half of it was real, but then the other half was just completely fabricated by the brain. Mm-hmm. And so they were saying like, yeah, you have these repressed memories, but how much of it is true and how much of it is just your brain?
Your brain is made up. Yeah.
Yeah. So it is, and it, like, I agree completely, 1000% frustrating because this did happen to her. But, you know, you also have to be able to stand up in front of a judge and be like, I have 100% proof.
Yeah.
Especially with the church.
Mm-hmm.
No other lawsuit was going to be successful because of the statute of limitations. Police did look into the allegations that Jean made about Sister Kathy's body. However, the medical examiner said that her memories were wrong, as there wouldn't have been maggots present during the winter. However, a second autopsy was eventually done by Werner Spitz, good old Werner.
Mm-hmm.
We stan him. He's on everything. Who has examined many cases, such as JonBenet, most famously. Spitz said that he found maggots present in Kathy's mouth and trachea. And it had indeed been an unusually hot November, the year that Kathy went missing.
Hmm.
So with all of this, there was actually a high chance that there was maggots on her face.
So did the original ME that testified, did they, well, I say testified, you know, that said that there wouldn't have been maggots, did that ME do an autopsy, like, on Sister Kathy? Was it that person? Or were they just giving their professional opinion?
I think it was the ME that done the actual autopsy and was like, no, there was no maggots. But then, like, Spitz came along and was like, well, actually, if you'd done your research, there might have possibly been maggots. And then he found some in her trachea.
Interesting.
Because Spitz is like, I'm going to get right in there.
Yeah, he's not afraid.
No. And you have to remember as well, like, it was a small town medical examiner who I think was in with the church.
Most likely. Most likely. So we know how these things work.
Yeah, so he was probably like, no. There was none. Not at all. I don't know what you're talking about. Despite this, Mascal was actually never arrested. And he died on May 7th, 2001, after suffering a stroke. His body was exhumed on February 28th, 2017 for DNA testing. However, his DNA did not match that what was found at the crime scene in 1970. The Archdiocese of Baltimore ended up entering mediation with 16 of Mascal's victims, which resulted in them having to pay out $472,000 between the victims. So some of them took payments, and sadly, Jean was one. She eventually took a payment because,
well, she wasn't going to get anywhere else.
Yeah, so she fought to try get trials and try get everything. But I think just in the end realized nothing's going to come of it. So I just have to.
You have to settle.
Like, I think her whole process was like, they're never going to admit to any wrongdoing, so them paying out is as close as she's going to get to them admitting it.
Okay.
Another name that police looked into was that of Billy Schmidt. He lived across the hall from Sister Kathy and Sister Russell. His former sister-in-law told police many years later about how on the night that Sister Kathy went missing, her husband had arrived home late with blood in his shirt.
Oh.
When she asked him about it, he told her he got into a fight. This woman, however, thought that a man who went by the nickname Skippy had gotten her husband and her brother-in-law, Billy, into some sort of trouble. this woman's husband, who never really drank, all of a sudden became a raging alcoholic and drank every single day after Sister Kathy's disappearance.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. When she asked her husband to stop drinking, he said the reason he drank is because they, quote, killed a girl and buried her behind the shop. And they had like a family shop, which was in close proximity to where Sister Kathy had been found.
Oh.
Yeah. Billy also had a mental breakdown after Sister Kathy's disappearance. He began rambling about the woman in his attic, and he went on for weeks about this woman in his attic, and eventually she decided to go up into the attic and see what he was talking about. And there was a mannequin that had a nun's habit on.
No way.
Yeah. How creepy is that?
It's pretty creepy when he's trying to say it's like, oh, there's a woman in my attic. And then you go up there and there actually is a woman in his attic.
Yep. Sadly, Billy committed suicide a few months after Sister Kathy went missing. His sister-in-law never saw this man Skippy again, but like she did not like him. Like she was like, he was trouble.
Yeah.
She had asked police if they found a specific cigarette brand at the scene of the crime, as it was what Billy smoked at the time. And it turns out that police did find that brand of cigarette butt.
That was a really clever question of hers, actually.
Wasn't it? I don't know if they told her yes or no, but we now know that they did. I don't know if she was told at the time, like, oh yeah, we did, but because it's now like a documentary and shit, we know this. Billy was gay and he had no involvement in the Catholic Church because of this, so he actually never had a reason for ever harming Sister Kathy or harming her in favor for the church. So there is that side of it. I'm only mentioning he's gay just for the aspect of it was the Catholic Church, and we all know how they feel about the gays.
Yeah.
So there was that kind of, you know, weirdness of it all. And then we have the final suspect, well, finer major suspect, and he was Edgar Davidson, who you are going to find this super creepy, Megan.
Okay.
Who, the night that Sister Kathy disappeared, came home with blood on his shirt.
Oh. Interesting. Right? Tell me more.
Interesting. Sorry, my foot is gone dead, R.I.P. When his wife asked him about it, he claimed he got into a fight.
Oh. Why is this everybody's like...
like, what? How odd. Like, literally, how odd. Edgar's wife suspected him almost immediately because he had a history of violent behavior. When the news broke that Sister Kathy was missing, Edgar was sat in his chair, smirking, claiming that police wouldn't find her until winter was over.
Oh, what? Why would you say that? Why would you? You may as well have just said, I done it.
I done it. Talk about being like, I am responsible.
Yeah.
Like, broski, you're so dumb. That Christmas, he gifted his wife a necklace that was in the shape of a wedding bell with a green jewel. It was the jewel that would match the birthstone for August.
Okay. Was she born in August?
She was not.
Interesting.
And it also meant nothing because they were married like for a few years and no one of importance in her life was born in August. However, okay. Kathy's sister, whom, remember, Kathy was out buying an engagement present for.
Oh, no, no.
Her husband-to-be was born in August.
Stop the lights.
Yeah. The sister, like, obviously nobody knew what gift she had purchased, but it was a necklace that was in the shape of a wedding bell with this green August birthstone in it. Wedding bell, engagement, August birthstone, her brother-in-law born in August. It's like too coincidental.
Far too coincidental.
Edgar was arrested for stealing a car and trying to pick up minors at a local school the following year. But there is sadly no proof to link Edgar to Sister Kathy's murder. They have no evidence other than him saying, oh, they won't find her until winter's out.
Until winter's over. Yeah.
The necklace. But they don't know if the necklace actually did belong to, like, was actually the gift that she had bought or not, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Kathy's sister was shown the necklace. And she was like, it makes sense to me. And I feel like it is something that my sister would have bought me.
Yes. Well, it clearly makes sense.
Do you know? But unfortunately, there's just no.
That was a really nice and thoughtful gift.
Right. And like, supposedly, like, that was Sister Kathy all over. Like, she was just a thoughtful, thoughtful person.
Mm.
This case is sadly still unsolved to this day, with many key witnesses and suspects having passed away. Many people have taken dark secrets with them to the grave, but hopefully one day we will know the sad truth of what happened to Sister Catherine Sesnick. If you have any information on the death of Sister Kathy or Joyce Malecki, please contact your local police department, mm-hmm. as I feel like this case just really needs to be solved.
This is something that I hate when I hear people say it, that it's just going to remain unsolved about any case. No, there's absolutely always a chance. There's always a chance that a case can be solved.
There was many, many secrets that the church let Father Joseph take to the grave with him.
And that's on them. That is on them. The church has so much blood in their hands, the Catholic Church.
No, they really do. Like, they really, really do. So the main theory, the most popular theory, is that Father Joseph knew that Sister Kathy was coming for him because she knew what was happening to those girls. And he paid somebody to kill her. So either Edgar or either Billy and his brother and his friend Skippy, whoever Skippy was.
I 100% believe that theory. I think that he did.
And that's how he knew where she was buried. And I do believe Jean when she says that she was brought to Sister Kathy's body.
Yeah, because that's what they do. They scare.
Mascal knew 100% what he was doing. He was scaring a 16-year-old girl into silence.
And if that's not Catholic Church approved, then I don't know. Like we said in the beginning, this is not to do with the religion itself.
No, and no.
I absolutely adore, you know, when somebody says, like, I'll light a candle for you, I'll say a prayer. I'm like, oh, I love, love that. And I would like to believe in, like, something like that. But the society around the church and the behavior that the church has let people get away with. Yes, it's disgusting.
And it's completely unacceptable. And he should have been held accountable. But instead, the church were just too focused on not having a bad reputation that they now have an even worse reputation.
Yeah, because if they had just come forward when all of this kind of came to light for the church and they
If they just sent priests to jail, like if the archdiocese of not just Baltimore, of everywhere, all around the world, if they just accepted that these accusations were coming forward, did investigations, and then sent it over to the police to let the police investigate it, I don't think people would have such a hard view on the Catholic Church. Because at least the people were, you know, holding those responsible, instead of what they do, which is bury it and move people like Father Mascal all around the fucking country. And not even just the country. At one point, they sent him to Ireland.
What?
At one point, they sent him to Ireland when they were moving him around and shit. He was sent to Ireland for a short period of time to priest you know over
what?
Here.
I bet Ireland accepted him with open arms, probably knowing what he had done as well, because there is so much shit about the Catholic Church in Ireland that
just be its own podcast in itself.
Yeah, and I do think that there are like episodes and stuff out there about it, because
1,000%.
Like, I think I remember seeing an episode somewhere about the babies that were found in Tuam. The nuns, not the priests, the nuns.
No, the nuns.
Had buried that is its and had own, sold. And
that's its own. Like, that just enrages me.
I can't talk about it. When I get drunk, I start talking about, like, Ireland and the way it's treated its people and, like, the Catholic Church.
My own father, his friends, like some of his closest friends, have been assaulted by priests. One of his friends killed himself over it.
What the fuck? Like, wrong with them?
Dad was 15, due to sit his junior cert, and his friend killed himself over what was happening to him from the priests, because altar boys and shit like that. And from that day on, Dad dropped out of school.
No way.
Yeah. He never sat his junior cert.
Oh, Paul.
He turned to his mom and his dad and was like, I don't want to go back there. And his dad, my granddad, was like, okay, fair enough, you don't want to go back. You have 24 hours to find yourself a job. And if you can't find yourself a job, you can either move out and live in the streets or you can go back to school. And Dad found himself a job.
Mm. And you can't even blame his dad for that kind of thing.
Oh, no, like, his dad was like, well, you're doing fucking something. Like, you're not going to, like, drop out of school at 15 just to sit around the house all day.
Yeah.
And also, it was the 70s, so, like. So, that has been the very sad case of Cathy Sesnick, which, unfortunately, you know, isn't solved.
But again, I do believe that it can be solved.
Hopefully one day her family will have answers, because they deserve answers.
Of course.
If nothing else. And if you haven't done so, check out our last week's episode, which was on Michelle, which is very sad. Megan told us that.
Yeah, a story of rage and jealousy.
Rage, jealousy, bitchiness gone too far. And make sure you follow us on Twitter at Give Us Morgue for new updates on new episodes and things. And keep an eye out on our Instagram, which is also at Give Us Morgue, for new things that are coming. Woo. Also, happy December.
Oh yeah, happy December.
Hope everyone speaking has their trees up. Yeah, yeah. Megan doesn't because she's a Grinch in Malta.
Listen, okay, I'm just trying to get through the fucking day all the time.
But it's okay, guys, she's coming home for Christmas, so there'll be plenty of trees for her to see.
Coming home for Christmas. Yes, plenty of trees, plenty of, and I'm like, yes, okay, because I'll be home for Christmas for like a good amount of time, so if I start Christmas when I'm in Malta, I'll be sick of Christmas by the time I get to Ireland.
No, you have to save it all for Ireland, because you'll run out of patience.
Oh, it's like you know me.
It's almost like I know you so well. Follow us on Instagram at Give Us Morgue for that. And keep an eye out for our website, www.giveusmorgue.com, where we post a blog post version of the episodes, which is basically just the information that we have read out to you in the episodes, plus our sources, which I don't know if people want our sources or not, but we're forcing them upon you.
Yeah, I like a good source. I'm like, where'd you get that?
You're going to love my sources for Manson. Fucking million of them.
Fun.
So keep your eyes peeled for Manson. Spoiler alert, he's coming. And make sure to follow us on whatever you listen to us on. We'd really appreciate that, like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Apple Music, all that jazz. We would really love that and really appreciate it. If you ever leave us a review, let us know and we will give you a shout out if you want one on the podcast. And you can do that by DMing us on Instagram, which I think I've said enough times, but I'll say it again. @GivUsMorg. And if you want to see who you're listening to, you can always check out our own personal Instagrams, which is @MegPowell_ and @Mrs_Neve.
Neve. All right. Peace out, y'all.
Peace out. And we will see you probably one more episode before Christmas. And then obviously me and Megan are going to take Christmas off to enjoy it with our family.
Damn.
Because that's super important. And so I think you guys are getting one, maybe two more episodes before Christmas. And then you won't hear from us until the new year. But we promise.
We'll see what we can cram in.
We'll see what we can cram in for you guys. But we promise we won't do what we said last time where we're like, oh, it's going to take like a 2 weeks holiday. And then, you know, we took 3 months. You will hear from us again in the new year.
Yes, you will. Don't worry.
Okay. Okay, bye.
Bye.